Okay, quick question. When a meeting invite hits your calendar, do you feel excited, neutral, or immediately annoyed? Today, we are fixing meetings and calling out why so many of them are quietly failing. Hello, my peeps. Welcome to Workday Playdate with Improve It. I'm Erin Deal, and this is the podcast where we talk about work, leadership, and culture in ways that actually help. Now, this month on the show, we are exploring F words at work. And yes, we are not talking about the F word you're thinking about, HR department. We are talking about failure. Because when failure is not allowed in an organization, innovation, creativity, and productivity suck. And one of the biggest places that failure shows up quietly is in meetings. Meetings that go nowhere. Meetings that should have been emails. Meetings where half the people did not need to be there and the other half are multitasking. Today's episode is called Fix Meetings with Focus Flow and Fewer Invites. And I could not be more excited about today's guests. It's one person. She packs a punch. Rebecca Hines is the author of Your Best Meeting Ever and is one of the leading experts on organizational behavior and the future of work. She holds a BS, MS, and PhD from Stanford University. You'll hear about that in the show. And has founded corporate think tanks at Asana and Glean focused on how work actually gets done. Her research has been featured everywhere from Harvard Business Review to the New York Times, and she advises companies navigating everything from meeting overload to hybrid dysfunction and AI adoption. Let's get to Rebecca's playdate in just a minute, but before we jump in, quick pause, because if this conversation about failure is resonating, I want to tell you a little something about my keynote called F Words at Work. Now, this keynote can be delivered virtually or in person, and the number of people don't matter. When failure is not allowed in an organization, innovation, creativity, and productivity suffer. And I think we can all agree that is a less ideal foundation for company culture. So is there a secret sauce to redefining failure in the workplace? Yes, the answer is celebrating our failures. Fail, yeah. So as your failing forward keynote speaker and your keeping it real failfluencer bestie, I'm going to give you an extremely interactive session where your participants will be on their feet, practicing how to view failure as gifts instead of mistakes. We edutain through storytelling and improv-based activities. Audience participation is 100% required, and we ask them to wear comfortable shoes and get prepared to get comfortable with the uncomfortable. If you want to innovate, ideate, and level up your professional presence and company culture, getting comfy with failure is the only way. F Words at Work is a wonderful keynote for any conference, any team offsite, or kickoff for the new year. Okay, if you want to learn more, learntoimproveit.com is our website. That's learntoimproveit.com. Let's get back to the play date. Okay, peeps. We are on the playground. Here's the problem. Most meetings fail, and we have normalized it. We fail to define purpose. We fail to invite the right people. We fail to respect people's time. And we fail to admit the meeting was a failure. Meetings are one of the most expensive uses of time in organizations. We talk with Rebecca about this today, and yet they are often the least examined. Why we are talking with Rebecca matters so much because Rebecca helps leaders stop treat meetings like a default and start treating them like a design problem. But here is the epiphany. Meetings are not really the problem. How we design them is. Data shows that professionals spend an average of nearly half their work week in meetings, and many report that most of those meetings are unnecessary or ineffective. It's not a time issue, it's a leadership issue. Now, when meetings fail, focus fails, flow fails, and people quietly disengage. The solution is not fewer conversations, it's better ones. And Rebecca's work shows us that fixing meetings is one of the fastest ways to reduce burnout and increase performance. Let's get to today's playdate with Rebecca Hines. Hey, Rebecca, it's happening. We're here on the Playdate. Welcome to Workday Playdate.
Thank you so much for having me, Erin. This is going to be great.
I know. I feel it already. Okay, so this is what I want us to do. I want you to just sit for a minute, just like get grounded, and let's set intention for this episode. It could be something you want to give to the peeps today. It could be something you want to receive. What's a word that comes to mind to you?
When we think about meetings in particular, which we're going to talk about, you know, the knee-jerk reaction to meetings is negative. And I hope by the end of this conversation, folks, your audience, us here, we feel just a little bit more positive about meetings and the potential of great meetings and the potential of having our best meeting ever.
Oh, okay. I like that intention of like, setting an intention to have the best meeting ever. Yes. Okay. All right. And then this is just a fun one. Where, if we could be anywhere in the world, where are we having this play date together right now? Like, it doesn't have to be on a playground. It could be anywhere. Where do you want to have this play date?
Oh, it's such a good question. So my happy place for the last 15 years has been the Stanford campus. Anytime I'm feeling blue or wanting inspiration, I go to the campus and Palm Drive, and you know, it continues to not fail me in terms of boosting spirits. And I think a play day is the perfect activity for a Stanford campus.
All right, we're at Stanford. I love it. I've never been to Stanford, but I'm imagining myself there. I went to Clemson University, and I got to tell you, every time I go back there, it gives me the happiest feeling. Like, I'm like, oh, I'm home, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, so I love this. We're at Stanford. Our intention is we're going to have the best meeting ever. And we even say we'll like have the best podcast ever. Okay, so let's take it there. Mm-hmm. Okay,
I love it.
Let's just talk. Let's jump right into it. Because you say that every organization needs a meeting doomsday. What is a meeting doomsday?
So a meeting doomsday is the fix for meeting overload when meeting overload has gotten so bad. And we all feel it. We all have, you know, at least at some point in our lives and careers, calendars that are overpacked, stuffed with meetings, legacy meetings that might have worked for us last year or last month, but don't work for us in their current form. So meeting doomsday is essentially a 48-hour calendar cleanse. You're deleting your recurring meetings for 48 hours and then very intentionally adding back the ones that have some value, thinking about how can we tweak? How can we tweak the length, the cadence, the attendees, and the agenda items so that those meetings work for us right now?
Okay, so good. All right, so that, as an entrepreneur, I could do that on my own, right? But we got a lot of peeps who are leading big teams and big organizations. How do they, is this a solo activity? They're doing this with their peeps? How does it work?
Ideally, it's done at the organizational level, and it's hard. It's hard to convince senior leaders that this is worth the effort and the potential risk. But consistently, you know, when we think about just how much time we spend in meetings, it's massive. You know, 20, 25 hours per week for many people, the opportunity to reset is massive. And ideally, it's done at the organizational level. If not the team level, it doesn't do a whole lot of good at the individual level if you're within a larger ecosystem, because meetings are interdependent by definition. You know, they involve other people. And the more we can level set at the team level, organizational level, the more we're going to fix our broken meetings.
Did I hear you say that people are in meetings 20 to 25 hours a week? Did I hear that correctly?
Easily. And it definitely varies by role, by function. But what's fascinating, Erin, is when we go back to the 1960s, we were seeing executives spend less than 10 hours per week in meetings. By about 2007, that number had increased to 23 hours. So more than doubled in the span of a few decades. And, you know, when we think about what those meetings look like back in 1960s, they don't look all that different today. And yet we continue to deploy them. We continue to know they're dysfunctional and we continue to cling to them as business as usual.
Man. Okay. Also, my dog, big deal, is here for the conversation. If you see him jump yes. up, he's an 8-pound toy poodle. I'm so fascinated by all of this. Sorry for the sidebar here, but I'm literally... Okay, I'm going to take a step back because I don't want to derail us, but I also wanted to share something. My team and I went to a 4-day work week in 2023, end of 2023, going into 2024. I have a smaller team. There's 8 of us internally, 30 contractors. So, okay, there's that. So the contractors weren't affected. It was more so the small internal team. And we did a similar thing where we looked at the meetings that we had and we trimmed down the ones that we thought were effective and needed. And we created an agenda and we said, no agenda, no attenda. And we had like this complete epiphany about how our time was used. And so that is easy for small businesses to do and to implement because you don't have to run it up a huge chain. But for leaders who are listening, who work in large organizations, how do they orchestrate this without it feeling chaotic at the top? Like, how do they raise this to the top to make it happen?
So the planning and logistics is important. And it's, you know, it takes effort, but it's not incredibly complicated. You need a senior leader to support and buy in and be willing to cleanse their own calendar. You need energizers within the organization. You know, you need people like Erin who will, you know, lift people up, celebrate those meetings that are getting deleted. It needs to be a movement. There needs to be an element of fun associated with it. But, you know, I've run so many of these and advised so many companies on how to run them where you see very quickly, as soon as you give people permission to talk about bad meetings and to flag those ineffective, broken, soul-sucking meetings, very quickly leadership starts paying attention. Because, you know, I was in a session a couple weeks ago and we were talking about what are the dysfunctional meetings in this organization. And one person raised their hand and said, you know, this meeting isn't working for me. It's not worth the time I put in every week, every month. I asked them to describe the meeting. It was a 200-person meeting. As soon as they flagged that meeting, the next person raised their hand, another person. Often we suffer from what's sometimes called pluralistic ignorance in meetings where we think that, you know, we know the meeting's bad, but we think no one else thinks it's bad. No one else is willing to raise their hand and say, you know, this isn't worth the time. And so we succumb to these bad meetings where we all are sitting in the room knowing that our time could be better spent elsewhere. But there's not that permission. There's not that explicit activity like a doomsday that pulls you out of inertia and allows you to have collective conversations around how we can fix meetings collectively in a way that's going to be better for all of us.
Wow. Okay. Wow. Okay. I'm going back to my own corporate experience because I will say, not to toot the horn, but I'm going to give it a little boop, boop, because I feel like our meetings are compact. They are like boom, boom, boom. I feel like because we did our own doomsday. I didn't know it was called a doomsday, but we did a doomsday, a version of our own doomsday. We have really gotten our meetings that everyone is in participation. Again, there's not 200 people. But I think back to my own corporate experience, and I just remember sitting in this one room in my corporate life, every week, and just like for an hour and a half. And I was literally like, what is the point? And I was in a sales role. I was like, I could be doing so many more things that are productive and useful of my time. My peeps, I hope you are enjoying the show. We'll be right back after a quick break from our sponsors. Thank you for supporting those who support the show. You're listening to Workday Playdate on the Passion Struck Network. Now back to our show. I love we got to have the cheerleaders and the champions and get these leadership peeps on board. But I just want to like even take a step back even further because I'm curious your answer to this. How did meetings even become like the knee-jerk response to communication in the first place? Like, how does that even happen?
It's such a great question. So there are different dimensions to this for sure. One of the big ones is we know that so much of our work is invisible, right? It's hard to see someone thinking deeply about a strategy or coaching a teammate or thinking through a creative idea. Meetings, on the other hand, are highly visible. They're the most visible form of work that we have consistently in our organizations. Often calendars are public within the organization. Often you can see people in the conference room. Often you can see that Zoom screen. We know that as humans, we associate visibility with value and presence with productivity. And because of that, because there's so much lack of clarity right now in organizations, employees don't know what they're responsible for. They're not sure where AI fits into the picture. They're not sure how their work connects to company goals. Meetings become this way to show productivity, show progress, regardless of whether anything important happens in the room. And we all have seen it. You know, you see someone's packed calendar, you see them double booked for a meeting, and we naturally associate that with busyness and importance and status within the organization. And it's a very dangerous association because we start scheduling meetings just to do the thing, just to check the box, just to show that we're making progress and not thinking very carefully about what work actually needs to be moving forward here, and is the meeting the right mechanism, the right communication mechanism to achieve that purpose? There are lots of other reasons, but at the core of it, I think, is this visibility bias that we have and how meetings fuel that very much so.
Oh my God, this visibility, visibility bias. Presence equals productivity. So 2019, because think about it, before 2020, everybody was like, I was too. I was like, we need an office and we need to sit in it and we should be together and we should have lunch together. And I understand, I also super value the in-person connection. I really, really do. I really do. However, I now run a fully remote team. And it is amazing. But I will say, like, even today, as I was playing, I'm sitting here with my dog and like, I was just like listening to music and I was doing things on my own, lighting a candle. It's just so nice to have that freedom. I'm going on a tangent, Rebecca, because thank you for the TED Talk, because I think what is really awesome to me is that we can find other ways to be productive. We don't have to schedule a meeting. So how could meetings be a last resort versus like the first step in an organization? What is your thought on that?
Well, first, we need to give ourselves clarity in terms of what actually deserves to be a meeting. Because if employees don't have that clarity, they default to meetings for the visibility bias reasons, but also for a whole host of other reasons. It's such a simple fix, you know, a first part of a fix, certainly not this solution, but to give your employees clarity, what deserves to be an email in our organization? What do we use Slack for? What do we use a meeting for? And have that clarity. And what's fascinating, Erin, and probably resonates with you, is the remote first companies tend to do this quite well. They tend to give explicit guidance in terms of, here's our communication stack as an organization, here's the purpose of each one, and here are the norms around them. Here's when I would use a Slack direct message versus a public channel, for example. And in the book, I talk about the rule that I call the 4D CEO test. So essentially, a meeting should only happen if the purpose is to decide, debate, discuss, or develop yourself or your team. There's a second part of the test, but fundamentally, we can eliminate so many meetings and so many components of meetings by thinking about, does this pass the 4D test, right? A status update does not pass the test. A broadcast briefing does not pass the test. Even something like a brainstorm meeting doesn't technically pass the test. what do we actually need meetings for? Because they are the most expensive form of collaboration and communication. And so if we can use them as a last resort, everyone in the organization is going to be better off.
You just said something that was like, ding, ding, ding. And I call it normally when we're doing improv, the aha, ha, ha moment, because we're laughing, but I'm not laughing because I'm like, oh, shoot. Oh, shit. Let me just say it. Earmuffs for your kiddos. They are the most expensive form of productivity.
No other form of communication or collaboration requires us to be physically present, synchronously paying attention, like meetings. And any other form of communication where we're working asynchronously, there's breaks, there's pauses, we can work in a distributed way. Meetings are the most expensive form of communication in our organization, especially when they're in person.
Y'all, peeps, listen up. Especially if you run a P&L report, okay? Wow, that just hit home. That hit me right between the eyes and the third eye. And that went right to the jugs. I am like, how many meetings can I get off our calendar?
Well, it's fascinating, right? Because any other work activity, we measure down to the decimal point.
Yes.
And for some reason, and in your best meeting ever, I unpack several reasons, but we decide that we can close our eyes, cross our fingers, and surrender to bad meetings, in part because they've been around so long. They date back to well before the 1960s. You know, this is a tribal activity where previously our ancestors would sit around the campfire telling stories and sharing insights and recollections. The same sort of thing happens within a meeting, such that it's such an innate tendency that we have as humans to want to be together, to want to work through problems collectively before we work them through on our own. And we know that there's such a social pressure associated with meetings where as soon as you put that invite on someone's calendar, you're establishing a social contract. And breaking that contract, not reciprocating in the form of showing up for the meeting, starts to feel like you're not just declining the meeting, you're declining the person behind the meeting. And that, again, dates back to these, you know, very tribal tendencies that we have as humans that very much lead to this culture where we over-index on meetings. Our default knee-jerk reaction is the meeting over the less expensive form of communication.
Wow. Wow. Mind blown. What is your thought to this? Because as I'm sitting here being like, oh, I'm going to snatch our meetings off the calendar, I'm also like, oh, they're also touch points. They are social connection points. They are team building opportunities. But with intention, we can have the correct amount of meetings. Is that what you would say? Like just intentionally having them versus just throwing them up there to have them up there?
Absolutely. And the premise of your best meeting ever is meetings are a product. Meetings are the most important product we have in our organization. They're where the hardest decisions get made. They're where the trickiest alignment is set. They're where culture is built or destroyed. And yet they're also the most expensive and the least optimized. And so this intentionality is so important. And there's a reason why that fourth D is develop yourself and develop your team, because we know that in-person or face-to-face interactions, there's no substitute for that in terms of building relationships. The problem, again, is we use meetings as the default and not intentionally thinking about, okay, what is the unique purpose of a meeting? And one of those very important purposes is to develop relationships, develop team bonds, develop ourselves as individuals as well.
Okay. So that I just wanted to track that for myself and for the peeps listening. So, okay, let's talk about, we're having an intentional meeting. We've decided what meetings are going to stay. We've doomsdayed our calendar, but these meetings are now here and we're in the meeting. What is the first sign? This is sort of, I just want to know where this goes. What is the first sign that the meeting is going to suck?
Oh, Well, the first sign is people show up late.
Yeah.
And that's not only, you know, it not only typically, not always, you know, sometimes people are double booked and that's a whole other problem. But it usually indicates that you're not showing up ready to engage and contribute in the meeting. It also frustrates other people. Even if it's just 2 or 3 minutes, we start to see the negative effects kick in. And so being late is one of the first ones. You can pretty quickly tell by how fast people start to multitask and pull out their phones and start, you know, toggling on the computer. You can start to see, you know, within the first 5 or 10 minutes, if you have the most powerful person in the room consuming 70% of the airtime, right? There are lots of ways we can tell, even without, and there's fascinating research to show that we can tell a lot about how effective a meeting is just by looking at the dynamics and understanding the dynamics, irrespective of what people are actually saying, right? The body language, the, you know, the multitasking, the distribution of airtime, all of these, you can observe a meeting without hearing any sound and be able to tell, you know, with reasonable confidence whether that meeting is going to be effective or is effective in the moment.
You're so right. I was just, as you were saying this, I was just thinking about, I'm sure we're all thinking about a meeting that I've had in the past year that, oh my God, it already set the tone where my blood was boiling in the first minute. And then it's so hard to get your amygdala to stop working, you know, your fear center of your brain. And I'm just like, you know, so, okay, that makes complete sense. Let's flip side it. What is a way that leaders can show up and delight their teams in a meeting? Like, what is the opposite of suck in this scenario?
Well, I love that you use the word delight. That's a word I use in the book because delight is a very interesting word. It's a combination of both joy, which we would expect, and surprise, right? Delight has this element of surprise where one of the most effective things you can do as a meeting organizer is ensure that within each of your meetings, you have at least one moment of delight. It can be 5 seconds. It can be a minute. It can be a shout out that someone isn't expecting that they've done a job well done. It can be the puppy in the background, right? Something that brings people a sense of joy and surprise in a way that is going to leave a positive impression on themselves related to that meeting. And they're going to want to show up for the next one. Now, the organizer also has a lot of other important responsibilities in terms of coming prepared, intentionally designing the meeting, treating the attendees' time as more valuable than their own, designing for the attendees and not for themselves as the organizer. We know that disproportionately, the meeting organizer tends to leave the meeting significantly more satisfied than anyone else in the room. And so thinking about, just as we would a product, user-centric design, how are we ensuring that both the content of the meeting in terms of the agenda, but also the physical environment that matters a lot in terms of ensuring that you're creating a space that people are willing and ready to engage with.
Hmm. Okay. Can I tell you some things that I've done and tell me what you think? Okay. And then can we do a little brainstorm here? Okay. So in improv, we use yes and as a way to brainstorm. So there's no bad ideas. I'm sure you know this, Rebecca. You got to know it. Stanford uses it. Okay. So anytime I share something, you would respond with yes and I'll respond to yes and with your ideas. Can we just give the peeps at home something to take back with them, some more tangible ideas? Okay. Can we try this together?
Sounds good.
Okay. Yes and start the meeting with a fun song.
Yes, and that song should have some personal connection that you can also share in the meeting to have it be memorable and establish that relationship.
Yes, and you could even have the song be thematic to what you're going to talk about.
Yes, and I love that. You could think about then for the next meeting, aligning with that theme to make it memorable as well.
Yes, and you can appoint a chief song officer for the next meeting to have somebody else come up with a song so your brain does not hurt.
Yes, and as a holiday gift at the end of the year, you could compile the complete collection of songs and gift it to your teammates.
I love it. Yes, and then they get a full playlist that they can use anytime if they need to feel productive and motivated. Okay, I love that, Rebecca. That was an improv game that I didn't plan on doing. See, I told you, sometimes they just come up. It just happens. But that's amazing. I mean, truly, there's ways to find delight. Can I tell you something? This is like episode 300 and something of this show. I don't even know, three something. I have done so many shows. And so I have to find delight in these shows. And that gave me delight. And so if I'm finding it delightful, you're probably like, oh God, she asked me to do this improv activity. But it changed it up a little bit, right? Like, so just even doing something, like if you find it fun, your team is going to find it fun, right? Because most of the time, that's not true. That is not a blanket statement. However, if it brings you joy, chances are it could bring somebody else joy.
Mm-hmm. And if you're intentional about it and you're ensuring that the questions you're asking and the, you know, the delight you're bringing is inclusive, people, you know, there's nothing better than leaving a meeting with that lasting impression of the moment of delight, right? We're going to remember this improv exchange. You know, I certainly will for weeks and months in the future. And it's the thing you turn back to. And it encapsulates the entire experience in a way that then makes the experience more meaningful and fulfilling and memorable.
Okay. And I want to stay on this theme because I love it. What do you do in your meetings? Like, what other ways have you brought joy to your meetings?
Lots of ways. So I have historically run research teams within organizations. My previous organization, I ran a work innovation lab. And so we used to have, in our team meetings, about once every month or so, we would have candy labs where I would bring everyone's favorite candies and we would compile little goodie bags with all the candies. And people would then share the stories about, you know, why are the M&Ms so memorable? What was that childhood experience that led to that, you know, lasting memory? So those types of things. You know, it's not every meeting necessarily at that extent, but I try very hard to, you know, incorporate the shout outs into the meetings, the unexpected shout outs, the shout outs that folks, you know, truly appreciate and aren't expecting. It's such an important part of how we design our meetings.
I love it. I love it because we need to have more fun at work. That's why this show exists. You got to have like, bring some candy labs to your meetings, peeps. Bring something that brings you joy, because if we're not having fun, what's the whole point? You know what I'm saying? Like, what's the whole point?
And we do our best work. You know, it's very clear. We do our best work when we're happiest and we're, you know, enjoying the experience of work. And delight is an important way to extract that and ensure that people are, you know, doing meaningful work at large.
Okay. So, Rebecca, if people want to start having a more productive meeting, what is one step they could have to have the best meeting ever starting today?
That intentionality. It starts with the title of the meeting. It certainly starts with the agenda, but think about how you're titling that meeting. And is that title telling people what to expect, or is it a generic, you know, sink coffee chat? We see the title of the meeting matter significantly in terms of the effectiveness of the meeting.
What are some awesome titles that you've heard? For example, we have Monday meeting and Thursday meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know what each one of those entails, but what could we call it?
So if there is a very specific, if it's not a recurring meeting, or if it is, but there's a very specific outcome associated with the meeting and it's a singular outcome, often titling your meeting as such is a great way to ensure that you're anchoring on, just as I would recommend you do in the agenda. What exactly are you trying to do in the meeting? Align on the Q3 budget versus Q3 budget discussion primes people to ensure that you're walking in and out with that verb, that action that you're intending to achieve. If it's a recurring meeting, if it's a team meeting, also injecting fun into it. You know, if you have a team name, put that in the meeting invite. All of these things prime us for a certain type of engagement within the meeting that should differ depending on the purpose.
Okay, I love that. You're naming the meeting the intention of the meeting. I freaking love it. Rebecca, do you know that Oprah Winfrey, before she talks to anybody in a meeting, asks them, what is the intention of this meeting?
Mm-hmm. I love that because you'll walk in, and I see this in particular with one-on-one meetings between managers and direct reports. The two parties will walk in with a very different understanding of what is supposed to happen within the meeting or what they want to achieve within the meeting. And often because of power dynamics, you'll have the manager disproportionately influencing how the meeting is designed and that intention versus the direct report, where if we're doing it right, the direct report should be guiding the intention of the meeting and in almost all cases.
So good. Okay. What would Oprah do? Do that. Okay. I love it. Okay. Well, Rebecca, I could talk to you all day. I know the peeps are going to want to talk to you too. Where can they find you? Where can they get your book? All the things.
So my book, Your Best Meeting Ever, is available at all your favorite bookstores. I'm on LinkedIn as well. And my website is RebeccaHines.com.
Love it. Okay. Rebecca, we're going to link it all in the show notes. This is my final question for you. How are you going to make work more playful today? What are you going to do?
So increasingly, I'm a big user of AI and researcher of AI, and I'm increasingly passionate about finding ways to use AI to inject delight, inject more humanity into the ways in which we work. So I'm not sure what that will look like today, but I imagine at some point I'll be prompting the AI to help me inject some part of humanity into the workday.
Okay, that is fun. Okay, you're playing with a robot. That's what I say when I'm talking to my ChatGPT. I'm always like, it's my robot. You know, you're playing. Sometimes I have full-blown conversations. You know, sometimes we're therapizing. Sometimes it's my life coach. Sometimes it's my doctor. Rebecca. Okay, well, I'm glad you're using it to bring more joy to work because that's what we do here at Workday Playdate. I'm so glad we talked about having the best meeting ever at Stanford on this Playdate. It was so fun. And I'm so excited for the peeps to find your book, to learn more about you. This was the best podcast ever. I had a pretty good time.
This was great. Thank you so much for having me, Erin. This has been a great conversation.
Stay tuned. Will there be more with Rebecca? Thanks for coming. Okay, peeps, let's wrap it up. Here's what I want you to take away. Meetings aren't neutral. They shape culture. They signal what we value. And when they fail, it creates a ripple effect of frustration and disengagement. I want to thank Rebecca for helping leaders see meetings not as a necessary evil, but as an opportunity to do better. And now it's the time you've been waiting for, the Playdate practice. So this week, I want you to choose one reoccurring meeting on your calendar. Ask three questions. What's the purpose of this meeting? Number two, who truly needs to be here? And number three, what would success look like in 30 minutes or less? What is the purpose of this meeting? Who truly needs to be here? And what would success look like in 30 minutes or less? If you can't answer these questions, cancel it, redesign it, or turn it into an email. That is not failing. That is leading my peeps. So until next time, keep playing, keep learning, keep failing forward. I'm so happy you met me on the playground. I'll see you next time.